And I think that I don't know if he expected the reporter to have published that, but I think that once he read that, that they said, "Oh, he's not coming."
Right.
You know, people probably were thinking, "Oh, he's either too scared to come or something like that." And yeah. I called him, and then he says, "No, no, I'm gonna be there." So, I mean, if you think about it, John, it just kind of is like, you know, flip flopping, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna go sort of reminiscent of back then.
Yeah.
From the.
Let me turn to the last part of our conversation, and I want to, you know, I want to preface this by saying that I'm normally very, I'm a little more cautious than I think than some people who are, you know, think similar to me ideologically on making parallels, historical parallels.
Yeah.
I'm a little more cautious. Others aren't, but, and, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing either. I think there's a lot of lessons from about the present we can extrapolate from the past, but I have seen some sloppy comparisons made in other contexts before. But I wanted to ask you, and it's a pretty obvious question. I mean, in the press, even the New York Times, there are some parallels being made between what is going on in Iraq right now and Vietnam in the film. And I don't think this is in the point when you do this in the film. I think you're allowing the audience to sort of come to their own conclusions
yeah.
about it. But throughout the film, you intersperse some of the Camden 28 today taking part in the anti-war rallies in the past year.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Well,
the parallels.
Sure. Well, there are a couple of things. The stuff that I have with them at the anti-war rallies were before the war started. We were actually filming at Cabrini College in Pennsylvania. John Swinglish was there. Gene Dixon was there. The night the war started, we were there. They were there just talking to college students about what they did. Now, for me, I decided to put them, this part in the movie, not because I was making the comparison between Iraq and Vietnam. For me, it was that I was showing that these people are still involved, you know, in some way in the peace movement.
Right.
That, you know, working for peace, the struggle for peace, is sort of a lifelong effort. It's not something that just ended when they were acquitted. That's the way I viewed it. And when I showed it that night at that screening, you know, people sort of was like, people were talking about, well, are you making the comparison between Iraq and Vietnam? And the answer was no, that's really not what I meant. Now, if you want to talk about parallels, and I'll sort of give you my thoughts, and then John, you can see whether you think it's like
yeah.
Vietnam or not. I think it's sort of too early to tell whether this is going to be another Vietnam. I mean, you're talking about 20 years or so of involvement by the United States in Vietnam. And now it's what, like going on 7 months or 8 months, you know, in Iraq. You know, just on that level alone, you know, it's kind of really hard to say, is this another Vietnam? But I think that sort of the strongest similarity between the two is this idea of the credibility gap, you know, with Johnson and the credibility gap, sort of the misleading statements and the deceptions and sort of basically the outright lies that led into Vietnam. I think you saw a little bit of that, or a lot of that, with George Bush and sort of the hype leading up to the war in terms of these weapons of mass destruction, in terms of the connections to al-Qaeda, regardless of what the Weekly Standard says.
Yeah, right.
You know that there's, a, in my mind, a pretty big credibility gap. And I don't know, John, if you sort of agree with that or not. Maybe you
yeah.
don't. But, I mean, that's where I see a big decision, and a big similarity. Another similarity, and then I'll let you say it, John, is this idea of, you know, we only want what's best for the people in Iraq. Well, I think it was in, like, in April of 1965, Johnson is publicly stating that, you know, we want nothing, you know, for ourselves. We just want the Vietnamese people to be able to pick their own form of government, you know, self-determination and stuff like that. And it sort of is I mean, they never wanted the communists to be involved in any, you know, part of the South Vietnamese government. And I'm pretty sure that the Bush administration really wants to determine the outcome of self-determination in Iraq, you know, in a way that it was like in Vietnam. But ultimately, it's maybe a little too early to make that direct comparison. But I think that there are some, you know, similarities, with the credibility gap being the biggest, I think.
Before we turn to John on that, I'm going to just take a brief 2-minute break and play the same.
You have some better bumper music here?
I apologize. The CD has not been switched, so you will have to persevere. But it will be a break of lesser time.
Okay.
So. Alright, we're back. Let's just resume. We were talking about parallels between Iraq and Vietnam, and
yeah.
John Swinglish, member of the Camden 28, who also appears in Anthony
Giacchino's
movie documentary about the Camden 28 and the subsequent trial, you know, is here with us as well. But John, could you offer your thoughts on that matter?
Yeah, and since you're murdering Anthony's last name, I'd like to try to pronounce your name, Merlin. Don't give my buddy a hard time here. Jeez, I'm telling you. I agree with Anthony 100%. I mean, I think that's really insightful to, first of all, say it's too early to draw all the comparisons. And I hear people on both sides doing this. Yes, it's not. No, it's not. Hey, nobody knows yet. We just don't know. But the deception is very familiar. And, you know, George Bush was going to go in there and start that war if they found weapons up front or they didn't or whatever. He didn't care. If they didn't find them, well, Hussein hit them. If they did find them, well, that's reason to go in. He wanted that war. That's all there was to it. You know, he's going to finish Daddy's war. That's really what was going on. And there's just a lot of deception going on. And I firmly believe bad causes have bad effects. You go into something with a lie or some kind of, I don't know, selfish or greedy reason, you're not going to have a good effect.
Yeah.
I just don't believe that good can come out of evil. I just don't.
I think certainly the domestic front, the surveillance that you alluded to earlier, the recent revelations that the FBI have been sending out memos, and we talked about sending out memos about activist groups today, I think that certainly is a parallel that I am pretty comfortable in.
Oh, sure.
Very early on.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
You know, I'm not sure they were even doing it that early on in Vietnam. I don't know. But certainly they're right on it now. And they're afraid. They know what happened. You know, it hasn't been that long ago. 30 years, when you look back on it, isn't that long a time. And they do not want to go through what they went through during Vietnam. That groundswell. I mean, it was power. It really was. And they just didn't know what to do with the anti-Vietnam War movement. It was not just those of us in the streets or in the draft boards, but it was, you know, husbands and wives that were basically, you know, either staying at home or going to work every day and just schlepping things out in an office. They were totally opposed to this, and we either vote in a certain way or whatever, you know, going to town meetings or supporting us in every way they could. They just don't want to go through that again.
I want to ask you personally, I guess we were talking about the reunion earlier, but your personal political views, and I know this is has to be a very nuanced answer, but have they changed at all since then? I mean, I think generally speaking, there are some values, core values, that will always remain intact, but are there some, you know, more subtle changes that you've undergone in the years? And looking back at what you did, are there, you know, I don't know, feelings of regret in some circumstances? Can you talk about just looking back at yourself, you know, decades ago, how you assess that today?
Well, in those days, you know, I was a far left, radical, pacifist, anarchist. You know, And that comes out of the whole Catholic worker thing, too. These days, I've moved to the center a bit. I don't embrace, in a knee-jerk, non-thinking, brainless way, which I'm very critical of people who do this, either side, you know, either liberal or conservative politics. I kind of pick and choose. And there's some things I agree or disagree with, not that my opinion is worth anything to anybody. But personally, you know, there's some things I say, yeah, I buy that, or no, I don't. I'm not a great Bush hater, like some people are, just like there were those Clinton haters out there, you know. I'm not necessarily a Bush hater, but I certainly hate this war, and I think he's, you know, just off the wall on this doggone war. But on certain other issues, you know, basic values or whatever, I see a certain breakdown in society, in you know, certain values, and maybe some. Every person I know who's a teacher in the schools can tell me horror stories about how impossible it is to maintain some order, let's say, in the classroom at, let's say, the high school level or the higher grade school grades. And, you know, a lot of that is due to just, you know, to me personally, I'll say it out loud, you know, a lot of liberal politics getting in there and saying you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't. And the kids are in charge. And, you know, I've said to some of my teacher friends, why is it that we have zero tolerance on someone bringing an aspirin to school, but there's not zero tolerance on telling some teacher to go get screwed? You know, I mean, that's a real breakdown there, you know. So it's that type of thing that has moved me a little more toward the center. I don't find myself in either camp. In fact, I'm registered as an independent voter. I kind of pick and choose. I really do. And like I said, years ago, I was far, far left. I just kind of blindly embraced anything the left said, and I just don't do that anymore. You got to wake up, and you got to put your brain in gear, and you got to think sometime, hopefully. And I am eternally irritated at people on either side. They just don't put their brain in gear. They just buy anything that, you know, Ted Kennedy says on the left or Bush says on the right. Or, you know, I don't buy it.
How about your religious views? Have those changed?
Well, now there's a biggie. Be right up front. I don't believe in a God in the sense of there's some guy up there that kind of sits and listens to what we says, and a Santa Claus God, as I call it, you know, kind of gives us what we ask for or refuses to give it to us, and if we're good, we'll get it, and if we pray the right way, we'll get it, and if we don't, we won't. I just don't think there's somebody up there listening to all this. I think there's some cosmic power. I don't know what it is, and I feel sometimes at one with it, and other times I feel separated from it, I guess like we all do. So, you know, I don't go to church anymore, and I don't do the God thing anymore, in a traditional way.
Anthony, when you were interviewing other members of the Camden 28, did you notice any subtle changes in political orientation? Or?
Yeah, I think certainly some have changed. In fact, I think one is like a motivational speaker today. You know, and has his, you know, this sort of company that goes out and teaches people how to go out and make money and all this kind of stuff. But the people.
Oh yeah, I got together with him in Albuquerque a few years ago.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember you told me about that
after you took your trip out there.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was driving a really nice red sports car, and he was dressed to the nines. Right. And this guy used to show up in court in like torn blue jeans and old sweatshirt with a little bag of dope on his belt, you know, and change his name to Weed.
That's right. Did he legally change his name to Weed X?
I think he just wanted everybody to call him.
Okay.
I'm not sure he really legally changed it.
Okay, so yeah. So
but, you know, Mike Giocondo was a Franciscan brother, and he doesn't believe in God anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So, yeah, there were, you know, and there are some who are still on that, you know, on that same path. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you a final question, Anthony, as a filmmaker. You know, many of these, you interviewed a lot of, there's a lot of oral history, I guess, in this documentary, and as a documentarian, I'm sure you have far more film than will. I mean, how many hours?
Yeah,
of film
I mean, there are, we have about 47, 48 hours of footage, and you know that's going to go down into 90 minutes.
Right. So I mean, some people are going to get cut out. There's got to be some editing.
Yeah.
What kind of concerns do you have about either, you know, oversimplifying what someone says or leaving out something that someone might want in, et cetera? Can you discuss some of those filmmaker problems?
Yeah, I mean, it's a... you know, probably spent for this first 45 minutes that you saw, you know, 4 or 5 months really just going through the footage itself, you know, determining where is that, you know, 45-minute mark. You know, at what point, you know, do we say, okay, this is half of the film, and then the second half. It's hard. It's really hard. And I know, John, we talk about this a lot, you know,
yeah.
About how do you... See, the one thing that you have going for you is that the person who is watching this, who doesn't know anything about the story, doesn't know anything was cut out, mm-hmm. or might assume that something's cut out, but has no idea what that is,
right.
that is cut out. So, on that level, you know, the person at home isn't really missing anything. But, you know, it's I guess, you know, our choice. What do we choose to put into the film? And, you know, we've chosen to focus on a few of them to make it easier for the viewer to just sort of remember everybody, you know. But, yeah, there are concerns. I mean, I'm having difficulties with this second half of the film. You know, where do I mean, how am I going to focus on this trial? What how much importance am I going to put on the informer? You know, because I really would like to show this also for what it was. I mean, it wasn't just about the informer. You know, I was obviously a big part of it, but, you know, this is also a resistance trial. I'm assuming you'd agree with that, John, in
yeah,
the sense that of
right.
being a resistance. So, you know, when you're constrained to 45 minutes for the second half, it's difficult, you know, and I'm still sort of struggling with that, of how much I'm going to focus in on that, what the informer did and why the informer did it, and
yeah.
the, you know, the trial itself. But
the first half takes us up to the arrest, just
that's
for
right.
the listener. So when Anthony's talking about the second half, he's got to develop this whole trial aspect, which is truly a great story, but how do you do that in 45 minutes?
That's right. I mean, and that's also why I sort of decided to make it 90 minutes and not just 1 hour, because I don't think that you can tell the story in an hour. Again, you saw the first 45 minutes. I think it's important to have that context, to have Howard's in there talking about, you know, a little bit about the history of the Pentagon Papers. You know, I want the viewer to sort of be with the Canon 28 in the sense of, okay, I understand, you know, what's going on here. So the decisions are hard, but, you know, it's many, many hours and... you know, what I said in terms of the viewer not knowing really what's cut out, that's sort of the thing that really keeps me going.
I got a really superficial question, but
yeah.
is 90 minutes, is that generally the mark when people have determined documentary filmmaker viewers start to zone out? Or?
No. I just said 90 minutes. I mean, it could probably be 2 hours, you know,
yeah.
but I'm sort of in my mind just saying, I've just been saying 90 minutes, you
right.
know. If someone said, we'll give you a 2-hour time slot
yeah.
to air this, I think I would do 2 hours. I mean, I think it needs 2 hours. You know, you can't do it in an hour. I mean, you could do it in an hour, but then, you know, and then you'd make those decisions, and again, that idea, well, they don't know this, so it's okay that you don't put this in the film, but, you know, you just lose, like, the flavor of special things, like John explaining, you know, what a blast it was breaking into these buildings. You know, I think you those are moments you need to have in the film, you know, you need, or when they were at the one of the things that I think at that screening you went to, a lot of people sort of objected to, was when they were at the anti-war rally in Washington D.C. and the Canon 28, the two guys walking along couldn't figure out what the chant was. You know, they couldn't figure out the chant was, you know, no war in Iraq, no war in Iraq. And then one of them thought they were saying no more crap. No,
crack.
You know, one joked and said, oh, what are they saying, no more crack? And he said, no, he's saying no more crap. And then he starts chanting no more crap. And, you know, and people thought I was making fun of, you know, of them. But I wasn't, because I think you need to humanize the people. You know, you need to sort of show that they're like everybody else.
Right.
You know, so, you know, do I need to have that scene in there? No. But do I want to have it? Yes.
When do you think the entire film will be done? And I know that's a question. That's
yeah. Well, you know, hopefully by the summertime. Oh. I'm my wife has been sort of basically, she put the ultimatum that it had to be done by December. You know, in terms of my weekends have been tied up with that. But I think we're in December now, and we're still at the 45-minute mark. But I have other things that I want to do. I have a couple of other ideas for films that I want to do. So I want to finish it by the summertime.
Right. Or do you want to stay in documentaries? Or features?
Yeah. Documentary. Yeah.
I want to ask one more question. I lied when I said that was the last question. This is a question to John, but looking back at these actions, is there? We touched upon this earlier, actually, in the first 20 minutes or so. We talked about efficacy. You know, was this more symbolic politics, or did you actually have a practical outcome in mind? And I was wondering, you know, just when you look back at these, not just the Camden, the Camden action, but you know all the successive actions beforehand.
Yeah.
When you look at those, what level of impact would you assign to them beyond just the obvious symbolism?
Yeah, well, certainly the earlier actions, the standby actions as we call them, were definitely symbolic. Later on, we did want to be more effective in shutting down a certain draft board, but like one night we shut down all of Delaware, you know. But, you know, they're also just going to move across the river to the next state and get as many guys as they need. So you're not really stopping the war. So the symbolism was still a very important part of all this. How effective were they? They were effective in turning the country against the war. It gave us a platform from which to speak. And I must say we spoke very well. And I think we changed a lot of minds and hearts. Johnson and McNamara, these people were talking about winning the minds and hearts of people. Well, we won the minds and hearts of people.
I want to end by just asking Anthony where people can go for more information on the film itself and, I guess, something that would really help, funding, helping out with a contribution of some sort.
Yeah, you could. The best way is to go to our website, which is www.camden28.org. That's C-A-M-D-E-N, the number 2, the number 8. Camden28.org, and you could, you know, read about the Camden 28. We have a lot of original documents up there. If you click on the button that says funding, it explains in great detail how you can donate money to the film. And we'd appreciate it if you could. And one other thing, you can also, if you go up there in the next few weeks, John Swinglish is currently writing a piece for the website. I've been trying for the last 2 years.
Yes, we speak.
Even for the last 2 years. There's a section called What's New, I think probably the next thing will be this interview will probably be up there on the What's New section. There hasn't been anything up there for a while. Our own very, John Swinglish here is going to, he's going to write something for the piece, so you could be looking for that as well.
And Gene's got one up there already. Let me just say publicly, I don't know if you have a second or not, but I have to publicly say that Anthony has virtually single-handedly kept this story alive. This great story would have died with so many other stories. And he has done just a dynamite job on it. And the film, the part I've seen, the 45 minutes, is just dynamite. It's a great, great film. It's quality work, but it also tells the story very, very well.
Thank you, John.
I'm just, I can't say enough about the work Anthony has put into this. You know, he got an idea and he ran with it, he and Dave, and really made something happen here.
Thank you.
I'd just like to amend that by saying I think he puts a lot of care into revising and evaluating the work. I mean, I'm not a regular film watcher, so when I went to the screening this summer, I went with a group of friends, and after you solicited comment, we couldn't find anything wrong with the film, you know. And, you know, we just were like, oh, we thought that was fine. So and just one, I think it indicates the project going well already, and two, your willingness to go back and try to fine-tune it. So.
Yeah.
A copy of this interview will be available on, the Camden 28 site, and I'll also post a transcript version of this, minus the interlude music and the couple of technical flubs that should be up in a couple of weeks, and I guess you can get information from that off the Camden 28 website.
Okay.
So thank you, John Swinglish. Thank you, Anthony
Giacchino.
And you can go to, again, www.camden28.org to find out more about the film and how you can help out with it money-wise.